education of our children doesn't begin and end at academia. There is a spiritual responsibility on each parent and teacher to nurture and train a young soul spiritually. This is called Chinuch. Join Rabbi G every Monday at 2 p.m. as he explores education and Chinuch for parents and teachers. Torah isn't education, it's transformation.
We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, and we discuss different topics, different things about us, being people that can learn from others, being people that aspire to be the people we want to be, living in the world we want to live in, and just how to make the world a better place, how to face our realities, learn and achieve, and see what's happening around the world. Today is not going to be necessarily, as we do many times with different professionals or doctors, about learning from them, how to improve things. Today is a lot more about a reality check-in of where we are, where we're standing as a Jewish community here in South Africa. I would say if you ask any random person here in the streets of South Africa as a Jewish person, who do you know overseas, they'll say that their family and friends are in, I guess, Canada, Australia, and Ranana. And basing it on that, we're all watching what's happening around the world, and specifically in Australia, that have been hit hard with anti-Semitism. And there's a very deep connection and relationship between South Africa community and Australian community. And almost the question of, are we next? Are we not? What's happening? Are we sitting on a matter of time? Are we sitting on a matter of what is happening, and where are we standing with our reality here in South Africa? A few guests joining me in this discussion. I'll start with our guest in studio. I'm here with the chairman of the South African Zionist Federation, Craig. Craig, I always get complicated with your surname, Pantanowitz. Is that correct?
Pantanowitz.
Pantanowitz. Right. Okay. Craig Pantanowitz, you are the new chairman of the South African Zionist Federation. So let's get to say hi to you. Good afternoon, Craig. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good afternoon, Rabbi. It's my absolute privilege to be on the radio with you today, and a very good afternoon to all of the listeners.
Okay. A sentence about you so we get to know you before we introduce the other guest.
So, Rabbi, sentence about me. I am a 50-year-old South African born and bred Jew. Very involved in our community, obviously from the South African Zionist Federation's perspective. It is a voluntary role that I fulfill. I have full-time employment in my civilian life, and very committed to having a voice for our Jewish community as very proud and Zionistic Jews living in South Africa.
Living in South Africa. Okay. Amazing. Let's go on and meet our next guest. I want to say good afternoon to Iris Ben-David. Iris Ben-David is an educational policy and finance writer in the Department of Educational Leadership at Bar-Ilan. Good afternoon, Iris. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Sorry. So good afternoon, okay. Rabbi.
Okay.
Thank you for
so a sentence about you and about your role, Iris.
Well, I'm a professor at the School of Education at Bar-Ilan University, and my research is about policy and education. And I am born and raised in Israel.
Okay, amazing. And I apologize that not referring to you as professor. It somehow slipped my notes. Sorry about that. Stefan Silverman, you are the Director of Investigations and Enforcement at Campaign Against Antisemitism. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, Campaign Against Antisemitism, which from now on I'll refer to as CAA for brevity's sake, is a UK charity dedicated to countering rising anti-Semitism in the UK through outreach and education, and by advocating for zero tolerance of the law. I've been doing this for almost 10 years now, and I began because I sensed back in 2015 that things were starting to go awry for Jews in Britain, but even back then I would not have imagined that they would get to the point that they have today.
So I was going to say, Stefan, it looks like we're losing.
I think this is a war, okay, not a battle. We are losing some battles, but we are also winning others. And I think the key to what is happening is the silent majority, people who aren't putting their heads above the parapet, who I think don't really like a lot of what they see is going on at the moment. So I think the task is to engage them more fully.
Okay. So that's, you know, you talk about the silent majority, which is a question I was going to ask Craig before, and I'm going to go to Professor Iris, and I'll tell you why in a second. The question I was going to ask you about it is, I sometimes think of us living in South Africa with a silent majority in a way that are, you know, we're okay with. At the same time, and this is where I'm going to ask Professor Iris, as someone who implements educational policy and leadership, we know the educational system in South Africa. We know how proud our political parties are for standing against Israel and standing against Zionism, standing and, you know, we have people that in one day are recognized worldwide for screaming kill the Boer, and the other day they're standing in front of the Israeli embassy in Pretoria, and you know, it doesn't sound too amazing. So before we go there, just Iris, from your side and from what you see, what is the effect that the agendas of the leaders in the country have when it comes to implementing curriculums in leadership in universities and in schools, and how does that affect our reality here?
Well, I guess, I mean, you mean not in Israel, right? In
other necessarily, countries. Yes. As a person who implements these programs, how important are they, and what relevance would it have to us when we know our government has a very clear policy? Does that affect the academia?
Yeah, we have major effect here all over. I mean, the academia. What actually is going on is, like, you know, there are many places that have been boycotting all the university professors and all the papers. And we've been through a very rough time, but it's been a little bit better for now. But the main idea is how the universities make things better and make, you know, like the professor that teach this kind of matters face the reality of what's going on. So we have the experience of Colombia that have this professor that is teaching about the case of Israel, but he is a Muslim and he is against Zionism, and he is actually was the one that put on board to teach these kind of matters. So there've been a lot of effort to, you know, remove this course from Columbia University. And there are other places where none of this is done. I mean, maybe a little bit is done about these cases, and need to be more influence, more, you know, courses that put this on the board. But from what I know as, you know, ed finance specialists, is that I invited once to the CIES conference in the US, the Comparative International Education Society conference, a person who was talking about the finance of elite universities in the United States by the money coming from, you know, like countries that are very extreme and very anti-Israel countries. And they are actually giving a lot of philanthropy to elite universities, and that affect a lot the curriculum and also the political arena there.
Well, so
within the universities,
you know, on that point, Professor, I have to ask Craig, is that happening here in South Africa as well?
Rabbi, no question. We've seen very virulent anti-Israel sentiment coming out of UCT. To some extent, some of the other universities in South Africa are also impacted by this. There's no question that this is a worldwide problem, and it's something that we as the South African Zionist Federation take seriously. We are pressed to make sure that Jews on campuses in South Africa still have a voice, can still engage in campus life, and can still get the most out of their university education whilst not being afraid to be visibly Jewish and or visibly Zionistic.
Okay, which is interesting. You know, you're talking about Jewish and Zionistic, which we do need to take a short break. When we come back, one of the things I want to hear is, you know, Stefan is talking about his job as finding anti-Semitism. You're coming from a Zionistic point of view, and it almost sounds and looks like you're doing the same thing. So I would love to hear more about that. Let's just take a short break, and when we come back, we'll dive into that more.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are here, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, and we are in the middle of a fascinating discussion. We just started speaking about anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, the reality of the world and what's happening, what we're seeing, especially worried about what we're seeing in Australia, but also in other countries. Specifically today, I saw an article about some agency. I guess they're not that important, that I can't remember who, but it was a worldwide agency speaking about Iran losing the war to Israel, so they're going to target Jewish communities around the world for revenge, which is a very important discussion we need to have about it. And I'm here in a discussion with a few of the leaders in that area, with, as I said, Stefan Silverman, who is director of investigation and enforcement at Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, Professor Iris Ben-David, who is in Educational Policy and Finance in the Department of Educational Leadership in Bar-Ilan, as well as Craig Penterovitz, who is the chairperson of the South African Zionist Federation. So, right before the break, I asked the question to Stefan and Craig. You both speak almost the same language, yet one of you is saying anti-Semitism, one of you is saying anti-Zionism. Let's understand a bit more. Stefan, your thoughts.
Okay, just one small thing. It's Stephen, by the way.
Stephen? I don't know. Stephen, okay. Yeah. Okay, sorry about that. Okay?
No problem. So look, let's be very clear. We're talking, I think this is semantics. What we are seeing today is the moment has come for people who were influenced by a form of anti-Semitism that was devised in the Soviet Union, anti-Zionist anti-Semitism, and that was then promulgated throughout the global left, predominantly through academia. So we're essentially talking about the same thing. It is a form of anti-Semitism. Anti-Zionism is a form of anti-Semitism that focuses on Israel as the Jew among nations. And it's really interesting because we live at a time when
You'll go afterwards. I can see you're biting your lips. You'll go afterwards. Okay, Stephen?
Where it's commonly accepted that minorities have the right to define who they are and to define the racism that they experience, not so much with Jews. We are constantly lectured about our own identity and told what is and isn't anti-Semitism. And it's just really intolerable and shouldn't be tolerable in a liberal-minded world such as the one we have today. But, you know, if you are saying, I mean, and let's be clear, anti-Zionism is not about criticizing the policies of the Israeli government. It's not about criticizing the conduct of the war in Gaza. It is about criticizing the very idea of an Israel, the very existence. And if you look at the protests and demonstrations and rallies that have taken place around the world almost incessantly since the 7th of October 2023, the call, yes, there are some there believing that they're supporting peace and an end to war and Palestinian rights, the majority are calling for an end to Israel. And if you are saying that the Jewish people, and only the Jewish people, have no right to self-determination, then I'm afraid that is pure anti-Semitism.
Okay, so I can see that. Wow, so many points that need to be clarified. And specifically, you know, you see these people standing there and screaming, death to Israel, etc., but also death to Europe and to America and to everybody. But it's almost like because they could use the Jewish people for that, so other nations are just chilled about it, not really sure how and where that comes into play. Before I go to you, Craig, Professor Iris, I promise you can respond.
Well, yeah, I guess anti-Zionism is one step after, like, anti-Semitism, because you can talk about the Jewish people, but then you have, like, the Jewish state, like the Israeli state. And Zionism actually defined the state of Israel. And by the time people are going against the state of Israel and anti-Zionism, the whole idea of Zionism, the creation of the state here, is actually people who want to detach the people of Israel from the state of Israel. And we've been through that in a long time in history, but we've been through that. And it's actually one right of the Israeli people to have their own land. And this is all about the definition. It's something not semantic. It's something that's very deep-rooted in these, the mind of these nations. Once they, you know, pull the rug under our legs and say, you don't have a right to exist, actually. Which means the whole idea of the Western world should not exist. Well, there is like the West ideology and there is like the Eastern ideology. Would that be like the Muslims? But then there is a different third one ideology, which is like the Israel, which is not West and is not East, is very something else. And this is what they would not like to acknowledge. And they find it sometimes anti-Semitism, sometimes anti-Israeli, but this is the idea that the ideology, the ideas of the being a Jewish and Israeli is something they don't want to have, because they can, you know, go against the West and the all ideas that the Western world gave the world, like the democracy, the human rights. But then what do they have in return? They have a different set of mind. But Israel is in the middle of that. It's giving the world a new line of thoughts, right? So by the time we kind of come and say, we are not West and we are not East, we are Israel, we are different. And we have a different way of peace, of thinking on the world, then perhaps things will move forward. There is a difference between us and all the others.
And a lot of that work in identifying it and moving forward is happening within the communities internationally that are supporting Israel from the Zionist Federation. But it almost sounds like, Craig, you stepped into Mission Impossible. Do you ever think that? Like, how am I doing this?
Often, Rabbi, but I feel like my responsibility as part of our community in South Africa to be a proud community, a community that stands up firmly for what we believe in, is more overwhelming than the fear that comes along with the risks of being a proudly Zionistic Jew. If I had to share with you a little bit, I can't argue at all in any way with the other two panelists that are on the radio. Stephen and I share exactly the same sentiment that anti-Zionism more often crosses the line into Jew hate. When it denies the right of Jews to have self-determination, it targets Jewish institutions and Jewish individuals globally. It has stepped away from being anti-Zionistic into, I don't even want to use the term anti-Semitism, because I think that's also a watered-down term. It is outright Jew hate. And we have a fundamental responsibility to block it at every single turn where we hear it. I don't see myself a difference between being anti-Zionistic or anti-Jewish. The nation state of Israel is intrinsically tied to who we are as a people. We have been praying towards Jerusalem for millennia. Almost in every prayer, every day when we pray to be able to go home to our biblical homeland. There isn't a part of Israel that isn't at a core of our fundamental rights to be Jews. And that is critical for this discussion. And I think that the South African context is also critically important here. where we have a government that has taken a position that is profoundly anti-Israel. We feel that South Africa has missed a historic opportunity to act as a real mediator. We've got phenomenal first-hand experience of what racism and prejudice actually look like in the real world. And I think that if anybody did a little bit of homework, and I'm talking about real homework, not on TikTok, to see the reality of what Israel is on the ground, this is a diverse, very, very well-documented it's a very, very well-documented democracy. And I think if people had to understand the fabric of Israeli society, where 2 million Arabs live in Israel as fully fledged citizens, they are doctors, they are lawyers, they are nurses, they are teachers, they sit in the Knesset on the government. You get onto a bus in Israel, it doesn't matter which part of the country you're in, you could easily be sitting next to an Arab, a Christian, a Druze, a Bedouin. It is a truly diverse country, and a country that takes all of its citizens' rights seriously. And we feel that the South African government has missed a really positive role that they could have played here.
So this is where I find this a bit difficult to understand. You know, we do talk about Israel being a democracy and, you know, being a country that an Arab judge sent the president to jail, and definitely equal rights, etc. At the same time, on the one hand, we have a government who is very clearly with an agenda, and a government who, you know, currently is in, you know, if we look at today's news between our president and the head of the police in Durban, and what's happening, carrying, I don't know, proudly or not proudly, Capital World of Rape, talking about murders, talking about crime. Every house you see in the around has a big wall, a big fence. And I ask myself, how do we have time as South Africans to even care about Israel? How do we even say, when we're struggling to get electricity, we're struggling to get water, and our municipal people will come with a kafiyeh to the council while we are sitting in load shedding? Where do South African people come and connect to this? If sometimes I think, like, why do I care? Why do we care? Why does it make a difference?
Rabbi, thank you. I think that that's a very important point to consider. Earlier you spoke to me about the majority of typical South Africans maybe not having their voice heard. And I think that that's, in South Africa, we face two issues here. The first is that we have real fish to fry in our country. I think that South Africans in general face immeasurable hardship and difficulty every single day. Priorities often putting enough food on the table to feed your family, being able to have electricity, being able to have running water where you've got clean sanitation. I think these are real proper issues that South Africans face every single day. And often I feel that our government has focused their attention to other parts of the world to deflect away from their failures here at home, and that potentially we should be focusing all of our attention on South Africans in South Africa to make their lives a little bit better. Perhaps the government's attack on Israel by taking them to the International Criminal Justice Court and spending hundreds of millions of South Africans' taxpayers' rands to vilify Israel is not the best spent money that the government has access to. They should be much more concerned around educating our people, having hospitals that are functioning, having non-starving people sitting on the side of the road looking for work when there is no work. And we think that in South Africa, the government have not heard the cries of their people, and they are much more focused on acting as the legal arm for other countries in attacking Israel. And so on the one side, we feel that there's definitely a gap there. And again, if I just was to mention that our government are not honest brokers. They've lost the ability to be able to take this unbelievable experience that we've lived and actually use it.
So you know, and that I'm going to say also one more thing. I haven't seen almost every political leader in this country that I've personally spoken to and asked them about going to Israel, they all said that they have been to Israel. And the Israeli government has brought them out, and they've seen firsthand, and they still hold a stand against what they saw in their own two eyes. Which makes me ask Professor Iris, as an Israeli actually, at what point do the Israeli people say, okay, forget it? You know, we try help when there's a drought, we send to Africa water. We try invite them to come see. We try, you know, whenever there's a natural disaster or whatever we can do. Is there a point that you're saying, you just whatever, leave us alone?
Well, I guess we will continue to help and assist when we need to do that. And we cannot say, oh, leave us alone, but then we have to hold and be together, united, you know, here. There are many voices here. As the previous speaker just said, this is really a democracy. We keep all the rights for the Arabs, the Muslims, the Christians, and everyone here. But then within us, within the Israeli people, the Jewish people here, there is a huge split because people don't see things from the same point of view. And we've been for the last 3 years fighting over this idea, whether or not we should be like a Jewish state or whether or not we should be like the state of all the citizens and embrace the ideas coming from Hamas, which is actually the level of craziness. And once we go and be together, not everyone should be the same, but just together, you know, I think things might be better here. And I also want to have this moment and invite you all to Israel if you come. We're all invited.
It always ends this way in these discussions. But I have to. So going from there, Stephen, I want to ask you a question. From living in a society that the government many times will fail the people when it comes to electricity, when it comes to water, when it comes to crime. And I've learned that whenever people do something on their own, it's because the government is not doing it. So when the police is not making the streets secure, then people hire private companies. When the water is not supplied properly, people get boreholes and solar panels, etc., when it's not supplied properly. Which is telling me that you sitting in the UK fighting anti-Semitism is under the understanding that the government, your government, is not doing it and it's not happening. And my question to you would be right after the break, why? Why is it that you have to do it as a private civilian instead of your government standing up for all its citizens appropriately? We just need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll dive into that question.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chafam Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we are in the middle of a fascinating discussion about anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, everything in between Israel, other countries abroad. And right before the break, I asked Stephen Silverman, who is the Director of Investigation and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, if the fact that he is doing the work and working so hard means that his government is not, and considering that that usually is the case when people take hands and matters to their hands. How have we gotten to that point, Stephen?
Well, look, it's the case that it's not just the current government, but previous governments in the UK, certainly in the 10 years that I have been doing this, have given us many fine supportive words, but have backed it up with little action. And I think there have been maybe several governments since I've been doing this, and there will be different reasons for each of them not to have done it. I think with the current government, it's very, very difficult to be sure, but I think it is clear that this is a government with a very lively set of MPs, particularly on the back benches. And some of them have specifically anti-Israel agendas. Now, although the government itself is not anti-Israel, it is doing a couple of things. I think there is an element of pandering to MPs and constituencies where there is a certain demographic that can or cannot keep them in power at the next election. And so there's a desire to keep them happy. I think there is also an element of fear as to what happens if you do stand up against this. The result being, and this government for the first time, above other governments have preceded it, have actually taken actions against Israel, which have actually surprised and shocked the majority of the Jewish community. But the result of that is that there is then insufficient pressure on the authorities who could be stamping down to actually take action. And the classic example of that is what we have seen in London for 22 months now, week after week of marches, which claim to be for Palestinian rights, but are manifestly about supporting organizations such as Hamas and Hezbollah and calling for the eradication of Israel. And we've not seen the police clamp down on those individuals in the same way as we have seen them quite justifiably clamp down with protests we've had elsewhere held by the far right. And we've been gaslit by the police. We're told that from the river to the sea doesn't necessarily mean what we all know it means. We're told that jihad might actually mean something very, very peaceful and contemplative. And what has happened is a permissive environment has been created for escalating levels of anti-Israel and by extension anti-Jewish hatred to take place and become the norm. And of course, the most recent escalation of that we've seen was at the Glastonbury Music Festival a week or so ago, where a band chanted death, death to the IDF, enthusiastically picked up by tens of thousands of people who were watching it, just like a scene from the scene in the park from the film Cabaret. It has now gained hold and is being used elsewhere. So we have this lack of will within government, either through fear or through self-interest, transmitting itself through to the actions of the authorities. And of course, that leaves the Jewish people in a very, very difficult position, which is why organizations such as mine do things like where the police say, oh no, we can't prosecute this, there's nothing here. We privately prosecute, take people to court and get them convicted. We've taken our prosecuting body, the Crown Prosecution Service, to court and won against them. It shouldn't be necessary, but it is.
Listen, I haven't been in London for quite a lot of years already. I hope that by now the police force has weapons. And if not, I don't know when that will come. Probably it's going to be a very painful awakening. What I'm curious is at what point, and actually, Professor, I'm probably not going to let you answer this question because I'm sure I know your answer. But I'm going to ask Stephen and I'm going to ask Craig, at what point do we give up? At what point do the British people say, you know what, there's not only 50 Muslim countries in the world, there's Europe as well, and maybe it's becoming for Jews to live in Europe like becoming for Jewish people living in Iran? Or at what point do we say, listen, this is already had crossed the boundary that there's no way back, specifically in a democratic country that the Muslims have that power?
I think this comes back to something I said earlier. It is very easy to draw the conclusion that an extremely motivated, loud, hateful, aggressive minority is larger than it is. And I know that there are a great many people who take exactly the opposite view. So, you know, certainly our position is we're British. Britain has been a wonderful country to be a Jew in, and we are not prepared to give up on it. So we don't give up. We carry on fighting.
Okay.
And that we are not in the minority, even though it might appear at times that we are.
It looks like Craig agrees 100%. You're nodding all in. What do you say?
I'm nodding all in. I think that I could echo those words and say that the Jewish community in South Africa is a very vibrant community. We host people from all over the world who come into our community and leave with absolute admiration for who we are and what we've built. I still feel, as a Jewish South African, incredibly free to practice my religion. I feel free to walk around with a yarmulke on. I feel free to walk around with tzitzit on, and live my very Jewish way of life here in South Africa. And I'm very grateful for that. And as bad as the government have been to Israel, we are still free Jews living in South Africa. And I agree with Stephen that I don't think that we are close to the point of packing it up and giving up. I will never give up. I am a proud South African Jew. And as a South African Jew, I have a responsibility to my community, to our community, to stand up and give them a voice, and to say that we're going to fight tooth and nail to ensure that our way of life can carry on. And we as Jewish people can continue to add value to South Africa's tapestry. We're an important part. We have had a huge role to play in South Africa being the free country that it is today, politically, in business, socially, and we don't want to stop that. We call on all of our partners in South Africa to join us and make things better.
So that I agree with 100%. And we are in South Africa and very blessed in that reality that we don't have people chanting the roads, and we don't have people, you know, being as aggressive, and we don't have any issues walking around and appearing however we want. We're still at the point that we're struggling and still fighting against the academia boycott. And, you know, it fascinated me in the last talk. There was, you know, the whole that doctor from Shiva Hospital, who, what fascinated me is that it's a doctor who's worldwide known for saving vision of eyes, who's treated kids in Gaza, who's treated, you know, Syrian refugees who come to Israeli hospitals and Lebanese refugees who come to Israeli hospital. And while these doctors are treating the countries around, they can't come to South Africa to speak because of what exactly, which is fascinating. It's almost like we're depriving our own kids with our mental health, with our health system here in South Africa, and to say what Palestinian kids could get, yes, from Israelis, but we won't take it, which is completely ridiculous. But we're still not in that, we aren't, and hopefully we'll never will be in that place of people shouting in the streets and you know, becoming unsafe. So definitely agree within that question. We do need to take a short last break, and then we're going to get heading towards the end of the show with the three of you, and let's start concluding the discussion about today. Short break, we'll be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
We are back and we're wrapping up a fascinating show about anti-Semitism. I just want to ask each of my guests the final question for today's show, and for about 30 seconds to a minute answers. I'll start with you, Professor Iris Ben-David. What is your view about the future? Where are we going in this reality that we're living in today? And what do you hope and wish that will happen?
Well, I guess there is the point of balance is quite changing now in Europe in terms of demographics. I mean, by the time Muslims are giving a lot of babies and birth rate is very high. So they might be minority, but then the point of balance is quite changing. And what I'm trying to say is that we are living actually in a biblical time, or we are making history, as you want to take it. And I'm also very familiar with our history books here in Israel. I don't know what you learn when you are a kid at schools, but we learn about, I'm sorry for saying that, I love you all, but I want you to know that. We know this book of history from the primary school here in Israel say that talking about Germany and German Jews, saying we are German, we are very proud of being German. And I really believe that, because German used to have an heritage. They are very, very, very elite professor there, that we are still citing them. And then there was a turn of no return point. And I don't wish for that. I really don't wish for that. I hope for the peace and I hope for the better. But this is like a wake-up call. We do have a country. It is the country of Israel. We have a place now.
Okay.
And what we need to do is to get the education right, you know, like make moves in terms of curriculum, in terms of education policy, move forward with that with all the force and change the people's ideas.
Okay. Thank you. Amazing. Thank you, Professor. I have to say about that, that just like we watch with a lot of respect Israelis who choose to live in areas that are more dangerous because they're on a mission and they are standing out there for protection and for people, the Jewish communities around the world are holding a very important role in protecting, even if that means personal challenges or whatever it would be. And we definitely are sometimes putting the Jewish nation in front of our personal, needs and conclusions. But I would love to hear, before we end the show, let's go Stephen and then Craig. That's your thoughts, your final thoughts for the hour about this discussion.
So I think, and I understand what the professor is saying with regard to history. Of course I do. I think what we're saying here, we're not blind to what's happening and where it could go. But what we are saying is, you know, we are proud, and I'm sure it's happening in other countries as well, we are proud British Jews. We contributed to the creation of this country, and for as long as we can, we are not going to see it destroyed without a fight. And I think, you know, there is a metaphor that you'll all be familiar with, and it is one that is part of our messaging to everyone, that, you know, anti-Semitism and Jews are the canary in the coal mine.
Yes.
And so what begins with the Jews never ends with the Jews. Any society in where anti-Semitism has become embedded has become a failed society. And I think the work we have to do is to get this majority that I keep referring to understand that. And we are. The signs are that is happening. And, you know, that is my hope for the future.
Yeah, 100%. Well, which is more, I think, bad news for the world than good news for us. But definitely hear that. Craig, in one sentence?
One sentence, Rabbi. I think that we face challenges. We have lots of positive things going on in the land of Israel, along with the difficulties that they face. And my last statement is that as a South African Zionist Federation, we won't stop trying to educate, empower, and keep working within our communities and both the broader South African community to ensure that people understand the truth about Israel and can see the beauty that Israel actually is and how we forge forward and we fight really hard to create peace. And hopefully that peace will flow through and we can keep building our own communities in South Africa.
Amazing, please God. And I wouldn't even have time to mention the amazing Mandela project, Mandela Day project you're doing on the 18th, and many things happening. Just want to say thank you to all of my guests. Thank you, Professor Iris Ben-David. Thank you, Stephen Silverman. Thank you, Craig. Thank you all for being part of the show and having this very difficult, important, and hard discussion. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Senna, for putting these interviews in place. And thank you to our listeners that are with us week after week, Monday 2 to 3, and throughout the whole week with other interesting shows. Stay safe, stay well, and we will, please God, be back next week and hopefully with better news.